We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to episode 283 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Dan Hilton, and with me today is Emil Evanesian. Happy deadline day, Emil. It's not over yet, so things could completely change on us in about 3 minutes' time. Are you comfortable with that?
I am. Happy deadline day to you, too. Not expecting many incomings, so hopefully it's a quiet last little bit.
Well, yeah, just because we're not expecting any incomings doesn't mean the rumor mill has not been going into overdrive, into hyperdrive. Too fast for any of us to handle, but yes, we even had something crazy where 75 million euros was expected to go out at one moment for just about 10 minutes this afternoon. But we're going to get into all of that because, you know, I know that we're going to talk about not only the transfer window, because that is what everyone is speaking about, but I do want to also hit the 2-1 Hadafe win. And in the big picture, regardless of the transfers that come in and the transfers that have gone out, where Barcelona is going to be at the moment. And of course, Antoine Griezmann and his future is the big, big story here. So before we get to Antoine Griezmann, I know I keep pushing everything off till later, kicking the can down the road, but I am going to almost giving myself time for anything breaking news to hit. Because at the moment, what we do know is that Emerson had been brought in and then flipped for a small profit to Tottenham, which I think was unexpected just based on what Tottenham offered, which is around the range of 30 million. And then Ilash Moriba, which was the transfer saga we expected all summer, he was sold to RB Leipzig between 15 and 20 million euros, depending on add-ons. And then here in the last minute, the last 5 minutes, Ray Minaj to Spezia in Serie A for a loan with a buy option of 3 million euros, 300,000 in 300,000 euro loan for this year. So those were the ones that were kind of expected. And I think for whether or not we begin to judge this transfer window a success or a failure, it's all about moving those goalposts. As you know, once Messi left, it was going to be a failure no matter what Barca did. But not being able to get off Coutinho, not being able to get off Umtiti, Pjanic, even Lenglet, Neto at the moment. I don't know. I don't know if it's a failure or it's just that we're going to have to keep moving the goalposts, knowing that it was always unlikely. And I think, Emil, we were trying to tricking ourselves into believing that getting off those salaries was going to be possible when we were told 3-4 months ago that no, they were not going to leave. This wasn't going to happen. You just have to accept that reality.
Now, there's presumably always going to be some manner of market for Neto. We've talked about him before. He's a capable, able-bodied sort of, you know, first team starter, like, you know, first division for, you know, first team senior starter. He will, with him, I guess it's as much as anything, just trying to get a decent price if you are committed to moving off of him. As far as the other guys, I mean, I think the dream of getting off of Coutinho is, I mean, just that, short of him somehow getting minutes and catching lightning in a bottle and looking like Liverpool Coutinho, where you can even try to claw back a quarter of what the initial transfer fee was for him. I thought that Pjanic would wind up going. I thought something would end up getting worked out there, whether there was Juve talk and there was just kind of talk around, I guess, all around Italy. And what was he was also rumored to go somewhere in La Liga, I believe, but that one seemed to be a very fleeting rumor. But
yeah.
I mean, I thought that he would be viable potentially. I know he's on huge wages. If he made less money, I don't think they'd have any trouble getting off of him. Umtiti, I think maybe if they ever wind up playing him, if he's, it's like the cavalcade of ifs, you know, if he starts playing, if he's healthy, if he plays well, at that point, maybe in January, you either sell him at a bargain basement price or just loan him somewhere for the remainder of the season. And you kind of just have to do that, kick that can down the road move and sort of half season at a time, get these wages off the books. Like, you're not going to be able to clear them all at once, but at the very least, you can kind of, you know, take yourself off the hook for having to pay them, you know, 3-4 months at a time. But yeah, Pjanic was the big one that I expected would go. I have very little optimism about Coutinho, and Umtiti, I thought there was maybe an outside chance. Maybe there was a club in France that still sort of, you know, very much wanted him and he would want to go and all of that. But yeah, I mean, I think we talked so much, and I think this is what we're going to wind up talking about more so, is the stuff that did happen. You know, there was so much talk over the last, you know, during the presidential elections and in the aftermath of the presidential elections, and with Messi's departure and everything, the tagline, or almost like the motto has been, the mantra has been, there are tough decisions coming. Barca are going to have to make some tough decisions. And I feel like that was a thing that everyone kind of said and accepted. And, you know, you sound like a smart and reasonable person when you're like, yes, there are tough decisions coming.
Right.
But then at no point until these last, you know, 2 or 3 days were any of the tough decisions. I mean, I guess Messi was the ultimate tough decision, but that one was even out of Barca's hands in the sense of, they didn't sell him. That was just simply, there is no way to make this happen.
Right.
But, you know, we never made any of these tough decisions. And it's not like the financial situation has magically gotten better. Simply by acknowledging it, we haven't made it better. There are tangible steps that have to be taken to make it better. And I mean, I think it's just going to be incremental progress. You just kind of clear the decks where you can and do the loans. And at least, you know, maybe you're not bringing in new money for selling a player, but you're at least lowering the sort of the expense, you know, the wage bill from month to month until you can run some of these contracts down.
Exactly. Right. So if we are judging the transfer window through just the lens of was a club able to trick somebody else to take those big wages, then no. But it's very nuanced to answer whether or not this is a successful transfer window or not, because Memphis Depay showed up on a free transfer looking like the best attacker that Barca could possibly get to replace some of the goals that Lionel Messi is going to provide. So from that perspective, again, if Barcelona finishes second in the league, based on what that they were dealing with, losing Messi, not being able to move any of their quote unquote dead weight, then this is going to wind up being a success depending on the results later on down the road. I mean, same thing with the free transfer, Sergio Aguero. Yes, he got injured. He's out for 10 weeks. Based on what he was last year at Man City, it looked like a bad move at the time, because he barely played at all last year based on injuries. And then he lost the very reason he came to the club, where he came because of Messi, and now Messi's gone. So his heart might not even be in his recovery. And then also bring Eric Garcia, who, of course, he was turned inside out against Athletic Club. And, you know, a lot of the fan base might already be out on him. As I've said many, many times, I'm going to be patient on that. And getting Eric Garcia on a free transfer is a good piece of business. There's a reason why Pep wasn't too happy to lose him. Now, the rest of the big decisions, as you said, or the tough decisions, right? There was a lot of young players that we looked at and said those players should be untouchable. And there was a worry that one of those players would have to go just to even make the finances make sense. We knew that nobody wanted Pjanic, but everybody would love Pedri for 45 million or 55 million or 60 million, right? Everyone would, even in Fati's state, everyone would love to take Fati off Barca's hands for 75 million or 80 million or whatever they have, of course. And so difficult decisions had to be made. That said, the club also sold Junior Firpo, Jean-Claire Todibo, Conrad de la Fuente, and Carlos Alenia, plus the free transfers of Messi, Juan Miranda, and Manchu, the contract termination of Mateus Fernandez, and the loan of Trincao. So looking at that list, yeah, I guess I was sad to see Conrad go. And we've talked about Todibo before, that, you know, that didn't work out 3 years ago now when we were kicking again that can down the road. Miranda, it's a shame. Yeah, Manchu may have been something, but also we see that Gabi and Nico Gonzalez could be more than what Manchu was. So you don't worry about things like that. And again, he also leaves on a free. So there was players that were sent out off the books. A little bit of money was made. As we said, Ilash Moriba, you would have hoped that he would have stayed, but once he decided he was going to go, to get close to 20 million euros on him is a pretty good deal for a player that played 14 times for the first team. And I know he's considered to have a lot of potential, but the way that Barca and that squad are kind of able to replace him with the likes of Gabi and Nico And, you know, I don't want to say pooch, but, you know, potentially there are other players that could fill those roles or fill those minutes. Certainly with De Jong, obviously, as well. Roberto also moving back to midfield, you have to put that as part of the equation. I know people would take Elas over Roberto, but in this case, pocketing the 20 mil and just dealing with Roberto as your fourth or fifth midfielder is, again, Roberto is a fourth or fifth midfielder, and same thing like Lenglet against Adafe. If that's a performance that your fourth midfielder in Lenglet gives you, I'll take that any day of the week, right? Yeah. Like I'll take that. If he's your number two, as he was for a while under Valverde, that performance is still not good enough for me. But that performance is fine for the fourth guy in the depth chart that you're not going to trust in the big games. Yes. Yeah. So going through all of those, give me your quick thoughts here on, I mean, Emerson, what an odd thing. I think people have come to terms with the fact that it's okay that, you know, for 30 million, it makes sense, but it does. We found the team to be or to be constructed in a certain way. And now that kind of flips that on its head, right? Now, Dest being a backup to Alba plus competing with Emerson, now that's not real. Now the idea of Sergio Roberto potentially being a right back at times is something now we have to consider again. Yeah, that said, Austin Mangatha is a backup right back. And I mean, I do see it possible to have Alba on one side, Dest on the right, Mangatha backing him up, but also don't be surprised if you see a stretch of games where Dest is on the left and Mangatha is at right back for a stretch of games, just because that's what Barca has to do. And so, you know, Barca are put in a point where if you cannot replace people, then you're just going to have to go with what you have. And that might be just what they have. And yes, maybe Balde will come up and take the occasional spot in the spring or Copa del Rey or whatever it is, depending on how he goes in Barca B. So maybe we're not putting enough credence in him, but yeah, I mean, give me your big thoughts about Emerson and then Elas too. I mean, I feel like we've said everything there is to say about Elas over the last few weeks.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, I mean, I think so on Emerson, yeah, it's so weird. He arrived for a moment and, you know, Barca are in the situation where we know that they can't actually go out and buy players. So any players they get are, you know, around freeze and things like that. And so at the very least, we were like, all right, we can't buy players in this transfer window. But this was a pre-agreed deal. So we got this guy. He's potentially pretty good. And just as we were kind of starting to understand, you know, just starting to have an experience with him and kind of understand just his tendencies and kind of get to understand him as fans and as someone who, you know, regularly pops into our Barca viewing lives, at the drop of, you know, kind of at the drop of a hat, he's gone. And I know in terms of kind of as a bit of business, it's not bad. They made a profit. The obligation to buy him was, in terms of timing, was suboptimal when it happened anyway, from a pure finances perspective. So in that sense, I guess it was almost just kind of a pass-through transaction to get kind of weird and banky about it. But it was effectively you barely had the thing and you you just, I guess, scalp the profit off of him. But that one's kind of a shame, because what I had seen of him, he obviously is a talented player, but he has all of the tools that you like in a player. And it would have been really fun to have him in the squad, particularly given, as you said, sort of there's going to be depth issues that are potentially popping up. People get tired. People even just pick up small knocks. I'm not even talking about kind of catastrophic injuries, but it would be nice to have the depth. And he was, if nothing else, quality depth and potentially more than that. The situation with Moriba, I mean, I think this has been one, it's not a shock for all the reasons that we've outlined and you know, re-emphasized and re-emphasized over time. I mean, wherever the actual culpability lies in the whole breakdown of the relationship, the fact is that relationship looked like, and I mean, clearly was broken for a while now. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there was any 11th hour kind of salvaging of the situation.
No.
I mean, I suppose technically, I guess if there was some capacity to up his wages, if the club were both inclined and able to do that, I suppose that might have. But even then, there's probably just been so much kind of vitriol and sort of, I don't even know what is bad water under the bridge, you know, dirty water under the bridge that I don't know if there was any clawing it back.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that the irony of the Elias deal that it actually, I mean, I wrote this article for Barca Blog yesterday that that deal kind of works out for both parties, got kind of what they wanted. I mean, I think Elias, truly, I think he did initially want to stay, but he wanted to stay for that number and his agents wanted him to stay for that number. Barca weren't willing to accept it. And that was it. It was over weeks ago, right? It was over after the first draw. That said, Elias wanted to move to a place where he could potentially, as I've said, I think it's not even this payday from RB Leipzig. It's the next payday that truly is the one that matters. Right. So moving to RB Leipzig, which has got I wrote this too, that they have, I think, a 6, 7, 8 player core, all 23 years of age or younger. He's actually competing in a midfield with Tyler Adams, with Haradara, Haradara, and I butcher that name, but he's competing with actually players with similar styles and comparative players. And so I'm interested to see how he stacks up against them, if he can find his way at RB Leipzig, because Barca saw so much great potential in him. He basically has some glitz and glory and shine on him, I'd say, for another 3 to 4 years. And clubs, big clubs, will continue to take a chance until he's 24, 25 and completely burnt out. I mean, he's 18 now, so maybe 22, 23 is where that next payday will be able to come in that window to, again, one of the quote-unquote other big club and elite. So it'll be frustrating for Kulay to see him someday at another huge club, if you will. But for Barca to get potentially 20 million for an 18-year-old at this stage, as I said, I think that's also what Barca would take, knowing that they had lost him, knowing that in theory he could have gone for free next summer. To get 20 million out of this deal is something that you take any day of the week.
Am I mistaken, or do they? I read somewhere, didn't they also get 10% of any future sell-ons?
Exactly. Right. And that's another big one, too, because even if he does go to Chelsea, is always, as I've always snipped around him, same with Man City. Yeah. So if he does go to them when he's 21 years old for 65 million euros, then Barcelona get 10%. Yeah. And they get 10% all the way down the road. And that's a great thing. So I want to keep moving this forward because the transfer deadline window is not closed yet. Barca B have done a huge rehaul. As I said, they brought in a ton of players, but I've liked what they've done. A lot of it is with loan to buys for players from the ages of 19 to 22, which is different than what when Francesc and I first started this show, 2017, 2018, it seems like the policy then was survive in the second division. And so they'd bring in players on loan who were 24, 25 or 23, 24. And it's just those 2-3 years of development do matter. And so they are bringing players that Sergi can potentially develop. So I am enjoying some of those. Again, a 19-year-old loan is much different where that's not a fully formed player. And if they get used to Barcelona, now you're talking about a player that could easily be brought in. I mean, that's what happened with Pedro. That's what happened to Carlos Puyol. They were 17, I believe. And Sergi Busquets even was, I think, 16 or 17.
Yeah.
But, you know, give him a year or two and you can reevaluate. That said, for Barca B, I think their biggest piece of business here, and again, this is just seconds because I know we're getting to the juicy part in a second about the rumors, but I think the biggest piece of business for Barca B was renewing Jandro Oriana. I think that's the difference between them potentially going to the second division and staying in the third.
Yeah, I think, that does make sense. And I mean, I think I'm really interested in what you were talking about with the, I guess almost like the philosophical shift in, I don't even know if it's philosophical shift, but at the very least, sort of redefining the parameters where kind of the markets where they play and the types of players that they're looking to bring in. Yeah, you get a Busquets at 16 or, you know, Puyol at 17, and that is a jackpot of a transaction. Yeah. And sure, and a lot of these guys, by the time they hit 18 or 19, maybe the price on them has gone up. If you see that someone is potentially what Busquets has gone on to be or what Puyol ultimately was and so on, yeah, you don't get them on the cheap. But I do like this notion of getting players at the very least, even in their late teens, because there are players who develop from functional or work in progress to good pros. And even if you're doing nothing else, and you know the hit rate for the Barca first team, even if that's relatively low from guys that you bring in, like outside of, but if you can get guys in who are 18 and 19, develop them into good kind of functional, useful first division players, that can essentially just be a almost like a cash machine for the club, where if you can get players for whatever you're paying, you know, whether it's a couple hundred thousand or, you know, a million or whatever you pay, but if you are able to sell them on consistently for even 2x, 3x what you put in, that as a almost as a going concern makes a lot of sense to me. I'm still kind of curious what Barca B is entirely intended to be, like what the vision is for Barca B. Like, is it almost like a farm system for future first team Barca players? Is it, you know, kind of where you take your flyers on maybe really raw and less developed young players and you see if you have any diamonds in the rough? Or like you said, I mean, there was the period where they were bringing in older kind of established veterans who weren't really going to kick on and be much of anything else. They already were kind of what they were, and you were just sort of treading water. And
yeah, I mean, I think there is an answer to that, and I think it's all of the above, with the exception of the letting go of Garcia Pimienta, which I think was just due on Laporta wanting to get out the old and in with the new.
Yeah,
and that's why that deal was done. It was a promise he probably made to Sergio Breslan as part of the campaign, and Garcia Pimienta wound up being a catalyst for that. That said, at the moment for Barca B, you have players like a Fati, like a Gabi, who are, you know, we watch them with Juvenal A, and you say they can make a jump to the first team. They're going to be first teamers. That's a fact. I mean, unless barring injury or something terrible happening, they will be the first team. Then you have a player like Dinko Gonzalez, who was always an interior, was always even an attacking midfielder in the academy. And then last year they trot him out as a pivot, because even if Coleman or people who are smarter than us at the club kind of making this calculation that maybe that would be something that would fit him a bit better. And so he's able to trot that out and work on those things and basically change his position at Barca B level. Same thing even with Conrad De La Fuente. He was with Barca B for 2 seasons. And now we see the player he is at Marseille, who was able to be sold for a few million from Barcelona. And he did that development at the B team. Now, was he ever ready for the first team? Yes, I think he was on the fringes. But I also think that the club just wanted to take that money that Marseille was offering. And I'm not sure if he has any sell-on fees. But for Conrad, he had to make those developments at Barca B. Because I had said even 3 years ago, when he was in his last year of Juvenal A, his first year at Barca B, he just wasn't ready. He just didn't look like... I was worried about him, you know, as an American, as a long-term prospect. Yeah. But he sat on the first team bench and that hurts. But the other 2 years, rather being the year before last season, 2 seasons ago, and then the second half of last season, he really did look like he had turned the corner and taken that jump. And it didn't happen until he was 19. So as you said, every player is different. Every individual is different. So when a player like Elash, I mean, because even Elash kind of took, he was always a high prospect player, but he had to figure some things out at Barca B before he was even ready for the first team. And so you do have examples of that. And then you do obviously have your, you know, incredible 16-year-old prodigies like a Fati, like a Gabi, who can make the jump right up. And then you have a player like Balde, who looked like he might have been able to make the jump up. He got injured, and now he's kind of has to refine his footing. He has to refine form with Barca B, and then he's potentially ready for the first team. Okay, so I want to move on from Barca B, because somehow we've gotten this far. We're over 20 minutes in, and we haven't mentioned the news of the day, which I was almost stalling. You hear it. It's almost stalling. At present time, full transparency, the name we're talking about is Antoine Griezmann to Atletico Madrid. Apparently, they're in talks about a loan to potentially buy, whether it's obligatory or not, is still up to, up for discussion. And that is being debated on this site called twitter.com. There is no agreement yet between the clubs, but Antoine Griezmann, again, no surprises here. He is open to the idea of returning to Atletico Madrid. And João Felix, he is not going to be coming the other way. Atletico Madrid has said no on that. So this that would really just be something to get Griezmann off the wages. And, you know, where this is progressing is a bunch of different directions. And Emil, I would actually like to hear from you first before I throw too many monkey wrenches into this.
So we've talked about Griezmann. And I mean, I think even when we were kind of previewing the team prior to the season, and I think possibly even after one or both of the first league matches, my issue with Griezmann isn't what he's capable of and his potential and his tools or anything like that. Though he's a proven commodity, he's a fantastically skilled player, he's capable of excelling at the highest level. I don't know what he is in this Barca team. I didn't know what he was in the iteration of Barca that had Lionel Messi. I'm no more clear on knowing where exactly he fits in the, either in the hierarchy or even in the game plan, because in a sense, and we have to be careful about this. Now I've done a complete about face on Memphis, and I am now just, I'm driving the Memphis bandwagon if anyone else wants to jump aboard, but Memphis is functionally doing some of the things that Messi would do. So in the sense where, anyone who thought that, okay, if Messi's not there, Griezmann's going to have new possibilities and new areas that he can occupy and new responsibilities that he can take on, that didn't really happen because Messi's gone and this other guy came in who seems, while not Messi, seems mentally dialed into what that role is and seems determined and capable of executing it. So Griezmann finds himself in the same spot where he's not a pure number nine, and he doesn't seem to kind of want to be that. He's not a midfielder, or again, he isn't trying to make that move. And even if he was, that would only further muddy a midfield situation in Barcelona. So I guess my question is, I don't know what he is. And if there is a palatable offer, I would take it. Even at the time when he was brought in. Now, I think the biggest problem was, now, maybe bringing him in on the money that they brought him in on seemed more excessive or just seemed extra problematic because of the Dembele deal and the Coutinho deal that had preceded it. So it just felt like it was another nine-figure dart, but at least this guy was fully healthy and a La Liga player, and we knew more or less, I guess we thought we knew, you know, what he was. But even at the time when he was brought in, it didn't make a ton of sense. He just seemed like another player. I mean, he was, in a weird way, he was kind of Coutinho 2.0 in the sense that the previous regime was so enamored of Coutinho. And it was as though, I mean, I wrote this at the time for one of the sites, and I wrote this in an article. Liverpool, in the immediate aftermath of Neymar's sale, Liverpool saved Barca from themselves by not accepting 140 million for Coutinho.
Yeah.
Now, lo and behold, if at first you don't succeed, then they went and spent 160 on him and brought him in. But so it, and I think Griezmann was sort of another iteration of that, where whether it was Bartomeu or someone in the regime was dead set on, we must get Antoine Griezmann.
Right.
Just the simple act of taking him from Atletico rather than what does he actually do for our team. And so I don't know that he, look, it was the talk all the time when Messi was here. Can they play together? How do they fit together and everything like that? Messi's gone. I don't think we're any closer to knowing where Antoine Griezmann fits. And I don't know. The only things that I saw today were that João Felix will not be involved in any move should one come to pass.
Right.
What are the figures that they're talking about? Have you seen anything on that front?
Oh, for Antoine Griezmann, I don't think that's been released just yet.
Okay.
As far as what those would be. But yeah, when looking at this window overall, I think it's all connected to Messi and the future all at the same time. where when you're talking about Busquets and Alba today also taking slashes on wages, apparently Pjanic and Umtiti, if they stay, they'll take a small cut on wages. Still waiting on the Sergio Roberto. Apparently they want a second look at those talks. And then Piqué, of course, took the huge, huge pay cut. Messi. And I'm caught between two minds. I'm caught between the mind that Barcelona, the wonder on why waiting on Messi wasn't possible. And it does look bad on the club that it's going to seem like, especially if Antoine Griezmann is able to be moved, that Messi would have been possible. And it looks bad on the club. It's going to continue to look bad on the club, even if Griezmann leaves. And that's why I do wonder, and I do have that question mark, is was Messi ever going to be possible, even if they moved all this off? Because what is the accounting that we don't understand, right? We think we have an understanding of the numbers. We think we understand all that. And that's why that 75 million euros that Danny Olmo was thrown out for all of 10 minutes, that's why immediately that's easy to throw out, because Barcelona, for a move like Antoine Griezmann, are they making it for a tactical or for an actual reason that matters on the field? I think the answer is no. I think it's a necessary move to be made regardless. And I think if they keep Messi around and they try to do that, and every club in Spain knows that Barcelona cannot register Messi and register that team and make all that happen, including Memphis. Memphis, remember, if Messi's there, Memphis is not registered at all. Yeah. And of course, people take Messi over Memphis, let him sit in the stands. Fine. That said, I don't think there was any indication to Barcelona that they would be able to move Griezmann, which I think was always going to be the domino. I mean, that's just even said that if he's not gone yet, we don't know if Antoine Griezmann is going to be gone. So if Antoine Griezmann in the 11th hour on a deadline day, that falls through. Now you can't register Messi. You can't register Memphis Depay. And Antoine Griezmann is the only player you have. And I think it was a risk reward thing that Barcelona had to go for. And of course, the risk is getting rid of Messi, and there's no bigger risk than that. And so I think the club will always come out of this, even if Griezmann has moved on, looking poorly because of the timing. Now, I don't mean to drum up some conspiracy theories or try to be the optimist, but as an ever-present optimist, I look at this Griezmann move and I say, even though it's a loan to buy, I think this is towards the future. And there's some irony in this too, because Griezmann, in the preseason and in these first few matches, the only time where he has really had any success offensively is when Memphis Depay, just like Olivier Giroud, just like Diego Costa, I'm trying to remember the old Real Sociedad striker that he worked with, but just like that, when they put their back towards the goal and they kind of sit back on the defense, right, and they move up into a center back, and then Antoine Griezmann plays off that action, that's where we've actually seen him succeed. And the irony is, the only way Barcelona potentially brings in a number nine next summer is by getting rid of Antoine Griezmann, right? The only way to get that player that they need to play with Griezmann is to get rid of Griezmann. And there is some irony to that. And that said, that's why I think, and here's my big conspiracy theory. This is a safe space. This is my podcast. So I do think that Barcelona are in on Haaland next summer, and not really January, but I do think they're in on him next summer. And the reasons are that, one, we talked about Laporta and Mino Raiola having some kind of connection, some kind of relationship, sure. But I also think that and I know if you go anywhere, you go to the Daily Mail and all these places, that Haaland is definitely going to the Premier League. He's definitely going to Real Madrid. He's definitely going to PSG. That is a lot of smoke. And that's smoke that we hear all the time about Haaland. The fact that we haven't heard more about Haaland, and I know clubs don't have any money, but the fact that City was more in on Kane than they were on Haaland does make me raise eyebrows. The fact that United eventually said to Cristiano Ronaldo, yeah, okay, well, it's fine, we'll take you back, that does raise eyebrows. The fact that PSG are saying, hey, we need to hold on to Mbappe, even though if Real Madrid, who apparently just sent 220 million euros, that PSG said, obviously, we don't care about the money because we're financial fair play doesn't apply to us. I mean, they got Messi, Donnarumma, Hakimi, Nuno, Mendes, Wijnaldum. And, right. It's a ridiculous transfer window that I'm not possibly being myself to compliment, because it's not real. Yeah. It's fake. Money is not an object. And if money is not an object, you're the one club in the world that it doesn't matter, then obviously those things are going to happen. Okay. All that said, PSG obviously could still be in on him next summer if they lose Mbappe for free to Real Madrid. But the fact that they weren't willing to let Mbappe leave for that money and then immediately turn around to buy Haaland also makes me raise an eyebrow, as if some of these other elite clubs were alerted to the fact that Haaland maybe is already leaning in one direction and he's just waiting for that club to find all the funds that they need to make that move. So, I don't mean to create some kind of conspiracy there, but there is, to me, there's a little bit of belief that Haaland next summer might be possible based on this summer. And even getting right. And now if you change that question and say, hey, if you had to lose Messi this summer in this way, because Barca couldn't take the risk that they were going to not be able to register him and Memphis, but that also meant that you were probably going to get Haaland next summer, would you take that deal? And I'm not giving, I also don't want to give, we've been hurt too many times, Emil. We write as Barca fans. That's why the Danny Olmo 75 million was like, I mean, that doesn't make sense, but also maybe it does make sense. Does Hector Bellerin, did that make sense for a second? Did, right? Does all these nonsense moves make sense? Because Kevin Prince Boateng was at our club 2 years ago.
Because, so many of them actually happen. You know, for all the ridiculous ones that you hear about that you can kind of dismiss out of hand, there's been enough of these odd moves. There, you know, everything from the sort of the financial three-card money that we played with Arthur and Pjanic and... You know, like you said, Kevin Prince Boateng was on the team. And, you know, look, I have in this space, I am generally kind of pro and positive on Martin Braithwaite. But Martin Braithwaite was picked up at the 11th hour for reasons that continue to confound me. It's, you know, not that he's an incapable player, but the reasons that Barca got Braithwaite when they got him, even at the time, just seemed really like astounding and weird.
Well, so, and if Griezmann goes, Emil, that means Martin Braithwaite is certainly a starting player for FC Barcelona all year.
Yeah, no, he's vital now. If Griezmann goes.
Martin Braithwaite can't be vital, right? We watched him, he had the two goals, that was fine, but you cannot have Martin Braithwaite be, I mean, again, I've been working on this number 10. I keep plugging it for weeks now, but I've been working on this number 10 big YouTube piece where I went through all the players in history that wore the number 10. And there was a lot of overlap too with numbers, with number nines. Listen, I went through the history of the number nines and number 10s at Barcelona. There are players that were not deserving of those jerseys. And Martin Braithwaite also wears 12. So this isn't even his fault. He's going to be expected to contribute if Griezmann leaves this fall as a number nine or a number 10 at FC Barcelona. And that is way too much on him. He just doesn't fit in that same class. And it's no disrespect
to him. It's not what you want.
Right, right. And it's no disrespect to him. It's just that's the state that Barcelona find themselves in. Exactly.
Right. No, he's a perfectly viable option and a good starter. And he's possibly the best player on mid to lower mid table clubs, in whether it be in Spain, France, England, wherever he goes. But no, he can't be – Barca's wagon cannot be hitched so firmly to Martin Braithwaite's star. Like, it just that doesn't work. Things have gone wrong if you find yourself in that situation. Alas, we actually might find ourselves in that situation. But I don't know. I mean, so based on that, do you think that – so would you keep – or would you kind of shelf plans to move Griezmann along – based solely on that prospect?
Yeah, I mean, I think it does affect the way you're building a squad this year. I mean, if they go in on the last second of this deadline in another 2 hours for Luke de Jong of Sevilla, I mean, it's not a move anybody wants, but it's a move that they might feel like they have to make out of necessity. And as long as that does not financially hamper you 6 months from now or a year from now, as I said, that's what this matters, right? Like the reason Coutinho and Umtiti and Pjanic are a problem is because their contracts are for more than just this year. And anything that ends 1 year from now.
Wages end many years. Yeah, that was
right.
That was
so any move that ends in 6 months or a year from now when you get to reevaluate, whatever. I mean, that's, I guess, where I stand. Like, will Luke de Jong, is he moving needle? No, I don't think he adds almost anything to Barcelona. No. But you're looking at that right wing now. And, you know, we're talking about Braithwaite and the health of Fati, the health of Dembele, but there is certainly a universe where Youssef Demir now gets, 25, 35 starts for FC Barcelona this year because...
Oh, I think that's where we're going.
Right, right. I mean, if not him, right, it's whatever player they can find, like a Luke de Jong at the 11th hour that pushes Braithwaite to the right where he's not comfortable and has Memphis on the left or something to that effect. Or when Aguero comes back again, Fati and Dembele, who's to see. But right now at the moment, the right wing is... Players who are naturally fitting there is basically just Ousmane Dembele. And then after him, it's Demir in that order. And then Alex Caiado is definitely number three on that list. So, I mean, if I'm Alex Caiado and I see Antoine Griezmann hitting the door, I'm saying, hey, I know I'm definitely never going to play, but am I never going to play at a principal? Or now that Griezmann gone, I can definitely play a little bit, right?
Like I might play a little bit. Yeah. I mean, he's, and especially with Dembele's health kind of perpetually a problem. And so if that does become Demir's role, if just out of necessity and then hopefully hopefully beginning with necessity and out of strong performance on Demir's part, if that becomes his role, then at that point, if you're Alex Kyle, if you're Coyado, you're thinking, okay, now it's between me and Dembele for this. Dembele is always going to have the inside track because he's the big money signing. He makes all the money. And ideally, if he can put in a few good performances, that raises the chance ever so infinitesimally that you can sell him for something, that you can clear that off the books. But it's not a guarantee. I mean, this guy's seldom been healthy, you know? So in that sense, it would be, I wouldn't be able to believe my luck if I was Coyado, you know, and Demir gets promoted. And now I'm very much in the mix to be number two in that position.
Hey, everybody, Editor Dan here. You don't hear from me very often, but I also don't record usually on deadline day. Alex Coyado, as reported by Albert Rouge, is reportedly set to join Sheffield United on loan until June 2022. So our comments here, unless Pooj is also out on loan by the time you hear this, well, these comments for Coyado don't necessarily apply anymore, but the comments about Pooj still apply. I think we end this transfer talk again. I'm still trying to update. I'm still checking Twitter as we go along, but looks like nothing else at the moment. What we do know is not going to happen is it seems like Coyado and Ricky Pooj will not be getting loans out of the club. And at this point, it's a tough place where I think we've had this conversation a million times, but now on deadline day, we look at it through the lens of the fact that I think the players opted to not leave. And at this juncture, I mean, people are saying that Koeman will be out in January, and so the players can expect that. I think Koeman is not out in January. I think if he is gone, if Koeman is gone next summer, that's because Barca didn't probably make Champions League. Right. They finished fifth or sixth. That's, I think, the only road that leads Koeman out. I mean, he has been there for 2 years. So, yeah, if Xavi calls up Laporta and we don't know about that relationship and says, hey, you know, I think I'm ready. I like the project that you guys have next summer, right? Like, let's say Haaland does show up. And then obviously Xavi's on the phone like, okay, pick me now, right? And then they'll reevaluate because Koeman wasn't Laporta's guy, sure. But if I'm Ricky Pooj and I'm Coyado, it doesn't mean you have to forego. I mean, a loan doesn't get rid of your future at the club. But I think both players, I understand it though, because both players looking at Alenya, looking at Sergi Semper, looking at all the players that they've known, their contemporaries, their friends, the guys they've grown up with.
Yeah, because even the guys
never worked. Never worked for any of those midfield players. So while on paper, you say that, you know, if I'm Ricky Pooj, I'm looking around and I'm saying, hey, look at Mallorca. Look at what they did this summer, but they had the old La Masia player, Jordi Mbula, who is friends with Ricky Pooj. He knows him well. They also have on loan Fernino from Villarreal, who I want to like, but he did maim Wesley Fofana for Leicester City in the preseason. So, you know, he's a bit in the doghouse, I think, of world football. Takafusa Kubo, another player who he knows, on loan from Real Madrid at Mallorca. And then Pablo Maffeo, another player who's around those circles from Stuttgart on loan, is another Catalan who, again, they worked together with the Catalan national team. And then Kangin Lee from Valencia on a free, taking a flyer. Now they also brought in American Matthew Hoppe from Schalke. So Mallorca are looking to get really young, really exciting. And whether they go down or not, they want to do it with young talent, swinging on loan, whatever. Yeah. And so if I'm Ricky Pooj, I'm saying like, hey, there are players I know that it seems like I would fit what they're doing this summer. This year I could go on loan and come back, but there's no guarantee. There's no guarantee those things work. But it seems to me like a club like Mallorca is all bought in on going young, that even in January, if they sack their manager, they can't redo what they're doing. They don't have a billion veterans to throw on the field.
No, like they've cast their lot, you know? And I think like you just kind of said it, there's no guarantee. So there's obviously an element of a gamble, both from club and players' perspective, but I'm even saying from Ricky Pooj's perspective. Maybe you go to a club like Mallorca, who are kind of instituting this massive youth movement and just bringing in, you know, young players from high pedigree situations. Now, we don't know if the players will work out. We don't know if how they fit together. We don't know what the end product is going to look like, but they're bringing in what is effectively good prospects from large clubs, and seeing if, I suppose, if they can effectively put together sort of a miniature version of a big club almost. And for Ricky Pooj, I would almost think that, okay, I'm definitely not playing right now. Yeah. Like this isn't working right now. Maybe you do go to Mallorca on loan and that doesn't work either. And that stinks and you have to come back and everything's awful. But the situation in Mallorca, especially if I'm a really young player who's not getting minutes, and I'm frustrated, and I want to play. The chance to play with a bunch of other young guys who are around my age that I know, some of whom I'm friends with, and if it works, would be amazing. And I think from Barca's perspective too, it would be ideal to do that. I don't know what is... Now, I don't know all the inner workings, because I don't know what's being gained by Ricky Puig just gathering dust. Like, he's in the closet. Like, he's like, why are, no need to cobweb him.
Yeah.
You don't want to play him. You don't want to play him. That's fine.
Yeah. I mean,
if it's your tactics, you don't like him, whatever.
And but for those calling for Koeman's head, that's a confusion that, I mean, Ronald Koeman is not going to get canned because he's not playing Ricky Puig. But you have to understand that, I mean, when it comes to results, when it comes to players, I mean, managers trusting players and not trusting players, I mean, he could freeze out. I mean, even let's say he disliked Mingueza or he disliked Dest and he frees out one player. That's not going to be a death sentence unless that player was Messi, unless that player was Memphis, unless that player was Busquets, like, right?
Busquets or PK, but even, you know, even in those even situations, then, sometimes the manager wins.
Right. Right. But a Ricky Puig is not going to have a manager fired. So if you're of the mind that you believe that Koeman should lose his job because Ricky Puig isn't playing, well, I mean, that's your prerogative. But again, it's a reality for you, the sad reality you have to accept that that's not going to happen. And again, we're saying hypothetically because this has been over for weeks. Like, why is we have not heard him linked to other clubs? Because Ricky Puig's camp clearly has said, you know, we don't want to go. We want to stay.
The heels are dug in. I mean, it's going to work at Barca or it's not going to work.
Yeah.
And I mean, yeah, they're playing chicken.
And him and Kayata are already 22. That's the other thing I want to remind you that, I mean, they're the ones now at this point in their careers, they're putting their careers in their own hands and they're saying, hey, you know, it's time to break in. And if they don't break in, now they're 23. And for Puig, I mean, I'm just trying to do the math off the top of my head. Now he's played less. Now he'll be 23 next year and he'll have played less than 2,500 first team minutes at the age of 23. Do you know how many players succeed in the first division after that kind of number? Not many. It doesn't work out.
It's not very many.
It doesn't work out. Same thing with Kayato. So, I mean, now all of a sudden, Ricky's 26 and he's playing for Real Zaragoza. No disrespect to them, but now he's trying to fight and help a big team in Spain in the second division.
It's your Sergi Samper and you're at, you know, Las Palmas and, you know, you're bouncing around the Liga and you're having a career. And I do think there is a certain element, and it's case by case, obviously, and it comes down to the player's personality and things like that. But surely he's heard and he knows everything, all the kind of the glowing things and next this and next that. And, you know, was he next Iniesta and, you know, all of this stuff. I guess he stopped considering other possibilities or other routes even to the Barca first team.
Right.
Because the only thing is, I don't know where the sort of guaranteed success lies. The only thing that I do know for sure is whatever it is you're doing right now is not working. Yeah. So there has to be some, I don't know, reconsidering or rebalancing. You don't even have to recalibrate your expectations. You believe you're that good. You believe you're good enough to be a superstar.
I mean, you have to succeed at Barcelona, but the reality that we know is that he's a squad player.
It ain't happening right now.
He could be good enough to be a squad player at FC Barcelona, but the manager isn't selecting him and he has to understand that reality. And on the reverse side of that is we've seen from Gabby, as I said, like Gabby, we haven't seen that much from, but I've been watching him for 2-3 years and that player has potential, just like Pedri, they have potential to be 10-year starters in the starting lineup. Yeah. And I just don't think Puig, you know, I just don't think his tactical sense is that level. But just like Carlos Alenia, I could argue with you, same thing with Oscar Mingueza, that Oscar Mingueza being the right back, and what I like about Mingueza and why I think he fits at Barcelona is because he's good enough to be, and he understands where he fits as the 16th to 25th man on the squad.
Right.
And those players are necessary. You need cheap young talent from your academy to fill out the rest of your squad. And right now, Puig is number 23, 24 on that list, which is just not high enough for where a lot of fans see him and where he sees himself. That said, the kind of argument is that, I mean, Emil, I felt like I was going crazy. I watched Hedafe. I understand that he ended things, that being Koeman, very defensive, that he suffered, fought for that 2-1. I totally understand the frustration. But looking at the squad that he has, looking at the options he has available, he did bring on Gabby and he did bring on Nico Gonzalez, right? He had two very, very young players basically playing as a, you know, two attacking midfielders behind a number nine in Memphis Depay. And they were just holding on for that final result. And to me, 3 points is 3 points in the league. No matter how you win the league title, you win it. So if they can get it over the line, that being Barcelona, that's, I mean, a big compliment to Ronald Koeman. And I understand that they want them to play the Barca way, but looking at the squad he has, you can only do so much with the tools you have, especially on a day when, you know, Pedri was out, Fati's not back yet, and you still have the cavalry to arrive. I don't know. I felt like the negativity, I understand when people are negative towards Koeman. I get that. But this is one of those instances where I understand the frustration, but I just think it's we're overdoing a 2-1 victory over Getafe right before the international break when you have all these missing players.
Right. I think yes, I mean, I'm not necessarily out on Koeman. I'm also not necessarily the biggest Koeman fan, but I'm not out on him.
Yeah.
He has his strengths. He has his weaknesses. He's the manager right now. Fine. You know, we move forward with that. And the Getafe, the second half of that game in particular was just really frustrating and kind of a slog to watch. And, you know, I was at a bar here and just, you know, it was a pretty good turnout to watch the game. And yeah, everyone was pretty energized. Even when Getafe equalized in the first half, it was a lively kind of exciting game. And then when Memphis scored, everyone was just in really high spirits. And then after a while, everyone was just half watching the game. And because you kind of got a sense of how it was going. There wasn't a lot of vibrancy to the game. At the same time, I agree, get those points because you do need the results. And if you don't rack up these points and you don't get wins, but playing, they're going to come for you anyway. So, you know, one way or another. And look, I mean, we saw what winning, quote, the wrong way did for Ernesto Valverde, but you do need to rack up these wins. You have to accumulate those points. I suppose the only thing is, if the experience of watching this team and sort of the ethos of, not the ethos of the club, but the ethos of this iteration of the team becomes soul-crushing 2-1 victories over Getafe, I see where that's a problem. Like the one result in and of itself is not a problem because you did what you had to do. And Barca aren't in a position where they can kind of punt results for a little bit and fully sort of commit to living the dream and living the ideal. They need to rack up points. They need to rack up victories. Ideally, I would like a little bit less of we have a one goal lead. Let's batten down the hatches. I feel like if not necessarily even tactical shifts, but I feel like the personnel shifts of Koeman are very predictable in that if we're losing, we throw on more attackers. You know, I mean, if we're losing, we throw on more attackers. If we're winning, we put on more defenders. And it's kind of like, it feels a little bit paint by numbers. And I understand he doesn't have the full complement of players and different types of players that he might want. But I do think there should be a little bit more, I don't know, I guess like ambition and imagination in the game planning. But I mean, that being said, the result itself was fine. I mean, they needed these 3 points. Go into the international break with 7 points and you're fine now for the moment. And, you know, come back and because we have Sevilla, you know, it's Sevilla on the 11th.
Which that game was postponed. So the next match is Bayern Munich in the Champions League. So you got to figure out, I mean, and that's why I think he experimented a little bit because you have to know exactly who you are before Bayern. And I think Bayern, the reasons why I'm not really optimistic, I think talent wise, Barca could match up with Bayern this year. That said, I mean, I think Koeman is a manager that can win La Liga, but I don't know if he's a manager that can win and navigate the Champions League, where it really does come down to your manager has to win the nightly tactical battle, which is oddly enough one of the very reasons why Pep Guardiola has not won the Champions League with Man City, where even though we can have the better team and the better players, it seems like he just gets his tactics wrong one time along the road every year. And that winds up being the end of him.
Well, there's always the one leg where Pep almost over tactics himself.
Yep.
Like he needs it. It feels to me like every one of these runs, he wants to put out one of a signature Pep performance where he conjured something new. And, you know, we had three left backs, but they all played striker and that's how we won or something like that. And, you know, so Pep overthinks it. Whereas I feel like with Kuhlman, my biggest complaint, I suppose, would be, I feel like he doesn't intellectualize it enough almost.
Right. It's right. It's not that he isn't, right. It's not that he's having outsmarted an opponent, or it's not that he doesn't have the tactical understanding and knowledge, because again, he's been a manager for 20 years.
Yeah.
It's just that it seems like when he makes a decision, and this is what his managerial career has been, when he makes a decision, that decision is made. And he just doesn't seem to have that fluidity on the sideline throughout a match, where he might get something right from the beginning, and that means he got it right. And if he gets it wrong, he gets it wrong. But yeah, we are going to have time, plenty of time, to break down Bayern Munich. Again, we close this with Griezmann still a Barca player, Luke de Jong still a Sevilla player. Those are the ones that are rolling, that are being spit around at the moment. But a few more hours to go for deadline day. So hey, all this stuff could be just thrown out by the time it's in your ears. Who knows? That said, I want to thank Emil for joining me. I want to thank you for listening to another edition of the show. We're also on Twitter and Instagram at the Barcelona Pod. Get all reactions to these kind of things. And then our closed Facebook group, the Barcelona Podcast, you can ask some questions there too. And Patreon is how we keep making these shows. I do appreciate all the new patrons that we've got in, I'd say, these trying times. So I really appreciate all the help I've got on Patreon. And I hope people enjoy the Patreon only show I had on Friday. That is the one of the big yearly gifts I give to the patrons, that if you want to be a guest, and I do thank the three guests that we had on that day, some good conversations there as well. And you can also listen to these shows without the ads over on Patreon. So a little incentive to support the show. And we're also on YouTube with the stuff that I keep plugging, some of the evergreen content and match reviews as well. And that is at the Barcelona Podcast on YouTube. But most importantly, thanks for listening here to the Barcelona Podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. Forza Barça.
Forza Barça.